This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib. Coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight,
a report finds at least 60,000 migrants have died or disappeared at sea or on land routes over the past two decades. The International Organization for Migration considers the real number to be much higher because many bodies are never found or identified.
That's Lisa Schlein reporting from IOM headquarters in Geneva. Details coming up.
Also, the investigation continues into Sunday's mass killing at an Orlando, Florida nightclub that left 49 people dead and about 50 people injured. And in Uganda, tensions continue to simmer 4 months after the disputed presidential poll.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on African News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, the investigation continues into Sunday's mass killing at an Orlando, Florida nightclub that left 49 people dead and 50 injured. Investigators are looking at several possible reasons why Omar Mateen attacked the gay club. While Mateen had pledged support for Islamic State terrorists, he also voiced support for militant groups opposed to the Islamic State. Investigators are also looking into the possibility of mental illness and whether Mateen may have been conflicted about his own sexuality. Witnesses say he visited the Pulse nightclub on a number of occasions. President Obama spoke today about the tragedy in Orlando. He used the occasion to once again call for action on gun control.
If we really want to help law enforcement protect Americans from homegrown extremists, the kind of tragedies that occurred at San Bernardino and that now have occurred in Orlando, there is a meaningful way to do that. We have to make it harder for people who want to kill Americans to get their hands on weapons of war that let them kill dozens of innocents. It is absolutely true. We cannot prevent every tragedy. But we know that, consistent with the Second Amendment, there are common sense steps that could reduce gun violence and could reduce the lethality of somebody who intends to do other people harm.
Mr. Obama also addressed his Republican critics who say he should use the term radical Islam when referring to Islamic State militants and other terrorist groups.
What exactly would using this label accomplish? What exactly would it change? Would it make ISIL less committed to trying to kill Americans? Would it bring in more allies? Is there a military strategy that is served by this? The answer is none of the above. Calling a threat by a different name does not make it go away.
President Obama speaking earlier today.
In Uganda, tensions continue to simmer 4 months after the disputed presidential election. There's been a wave of arrests that include current and former military officers. The arrests follow an armed attack on a police station in the north. There's growing concern in Uganda as the runner-up in the election goes on trial tomorrow for treason. Elizabeth Polat reports from Kampala.
Ugandan police have sought to downplay the attack late Sunday on a police station in the northern town of Gulu. According to official reports, 10 to 12 suspects opened fire, attempting to rescue Dan Ula Odia, an official with Ugandan People's Congress, an opposition party. Inspector General of Police Kai Kayahura told the media not to sensationalize.
We wish to assure the country that Uganda is peaceful and stable, and condemn those who quickly rushed to post messages on social media after the attack, exaggerating the situation, the magnitude of the incident, and even giving their own versions.
Police say the attackers in Gulu used guns stolen from a local defense unit last month. The firefight, which left one soldier dead, lasted 30 minutes. The suspects escaped, but police have since reported several arrests. A new group calling themselves the National Democratic Alliance took responsibility for the attack on social media. Little is known about them. Dickens Okello, a local journalist currently in Gulu, told VOA that residents are concerned about the possibility of more violence.
You remember, this is the area that faced 2 decades of rebellion. Like yesterday in the evening, that was Monday evening, there are 2 incidents of arrest where some bullets were released, and the whole town went into panic mode again. It was at 5 p.m. when children were returning back from school and people were retiring from work. You could see cars and the motorcycles rushing, just like on Sunday night when the incident happened.
The gunfire was later attributed to police, who, upon arresting several suspects, were attempting to control the crowd. Sunday's attack came on the heels of reports that around 30 people, including military veterans and officers, have been arrested for suspected anti-government activity. Local media are talking about an alleged coup plot, although government officials have called this a mischaracterization. Defense spokesperson Paddy Akunda.
We are conducting a joint operation with the police on tip-offs, on very reliable information that some of these characters we are planning subversive activities in the country that may jeopardize peace and security for other people. And therefore, we have arrested some of them, and they're helping us with investigations. And we will continue to update the country what is happening.
And tensions continue to rise. Opposition leader Kizza Besigye is expected to appear in court Wednesday on treason charges. Many of those arrested this week have ties to one of Besigye's allies, leading to speculation that their arrest could be related to the case against him. Besigye has been detained since the February 18th presidential poll. He was charged with treason after he declared himself the rightful president of Uganda in April, as President Yoweri Museveni was inaugurated for his 5th term in office. The opposition has contested the election results. Elizabeth Pola for VOA News, Kampala.
Italian prosecutors refused to release an Eritrean man charged with running a major migrant smuggling ring, even though there's mounting evidence of mistaken identity. Also, Italian police have arrested several people smugglers after a boat carrying hundreds of migrants landed in Palermo. Migrants were charged up to $2,000 each and were treated poorly. Reporter Josephine McKenna is following the latest developments as migrants continue to risk their lives by attempting to cross the Mediterranean Sea to reach Europe. She spoke with me first about the imprisoned Eritrean held by Italian police.
It seems that Italian prosecutors are demanding that he not be released. We're talking about Medani Mared, the man who was extradited from Sudan to Italy just a short time ago, a few days ago, because he's accused of being the mastermind of a people smuggling racket. Now, he's saying that it's a case of mistaken identity. He's still being held in prison, and prosecutors do not want him to be released. His lawyer has argued before a judge that an international police operation has grabbed the wrong man. And the Deputy Interior Minister, Filippo Bubico, said yesterday he doesn't want to comment during what he considers to be a time of serious difficulty and danger. I'm not sure who's in danger, but it's either a case of embarrassment for the Italian government and they're trying to get to the bottom of what really happened, or they're simply conducting more investigation, which is what they're saying publicly.
Also, in looking at some of the other things that are going on as well, there are 3 alleged people smugglers who were arrested in Palermo today. Can you tell us about that?
What we're starting to see now, more arrests of alleged people smugglers as they come ashore with the migrants who are being rescued from their vessels in the Mediterranean. 3 alleged smugglers were arrested in Palermo today. They are 3 Egyptians aged in their 20s. And what's interesting is we're starting to see a kind of a profile of what's going on these vessels. Some of the migrants who left that boat, who disembarked, said that the smugglers divided the migrants into 3 classes of people on the boat, depending on how much they were paying. Many of them were being fed only dates and water. So it was quite a dangerous and treacherous voyage with very little food and water for those on board. Yesterday, we had four others arrested by police in the Sicilian city of Syracuse. And they were three Gambians and one person from Senegal after the boat they were allegedly running came ashore with several hundred migrants there. And they are accused of cramming 125 people onto dinghies and forcing people to pay several hundred dollars. And their boats apparently included migrants from Egypt, Somalia, Sudan, and Syria.
So this sounds like a really dangerous situation, and I understand that some of them are paying between $600 and $2,000 per head to the smugglers.
Yes, the Egyptians who came ashore in Palermo, the alleged people smugglers, have been accused of charging migrants between $600 and $2,000 per head and feeding them very little. So after several days, maybe up to 2 weeks, on the Mediterranean Sea, these people are arriving seriously dehydrated with hunger. They're starving. Many of them are just desperate for food and water when they come on shore. Incidentally, we also had a UNICEF report released today showing more concern about the numbers of unaccompanied children. This has been discussed on the program before, but it seems that UNICEF is confirming that up to 7,000 unaccompanied children arrived in Italy from North Africa in the first 5 months of 2016. So that's of great concern.
That was reporter Josephine McKenna. She spoke with me from Rome.
A report finds at least 60,000 migrants have died or disappeared at sea or on land routes over the past two decades. The International Organization for Migration considers the real number to be much higher because many bodies are never found or identified. Lisa Schlein reports from IOM headquarters in Geneva.
The report says the majority of known deaths in the last 2 years have occurred in the Mediterranean region. The International Organization for Migration estimates 5,400 migrants globally have died or been recorded as missing in 2015. This year, IOM has documented more than 3,400 migrant deaths worldwide. Director of IOM's Global Migration Data Analysis Center, Frank Lasco, says more than 80% of the deaths were people attempting to reach Europe by sea.
The rate of death across the central Mediterranean route, we estimate, is approximately 1 in 23 persons. So 1 in 23 persons who have tried to cross the central Mediterranean have died or are unaccounted for among migrants this year, which is a shocking statistic.
The Turkey-EU agreement intended to provide legal migrant routes to Europe has largely choked off the Eastern Mediterranean Sea route from Turkey to Greece. So most migrants are making the dangerous sea crossing from Libya to Italy. Lasco says the risk of death on the route has increased, but the actual volume of people crossing the Mediterranean has not increased as much as expected. He tells VOA there has not been a substantial increase in the number of people coming from Iraq, Afghanistan, and Syria.
There had been fears that with the closing of the Eastern Mediterranean route, we would see substantial increases in migrants turning to the Central Mediterranean route. It still seems to be predominantly dominated by migrants from sub-Saharan African countries.
Lasco says about 10% are from Nigeria, another 10% from Eritrea, and most of the remaining migrants are from West and East Africa. He notes migrant death rates in Southeast Asia are as high as those in the Mediterranean, though the volume of people crossing the sea in that region is lower. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Thank you, Lisa. In related news, 9 out of 10 refugee and migrant children arriving in Europe this year are not accompanied by their parents or other adults. UNICEF, the UN Children's Fund, says unaccompanied children face a growing risk of abuse, exploitation, and death. In a new report called Danger Every Step of the Way, UNICEF says more than 7,000 unaccompanied children made the crossing from North Africa to Italy from January through May of this year. That's twice as many during the same period last year. The report says both boys and girls are sexually abused by smugglers and will be beaten or shot if they try to run away. Many children are forced into labor to pay for their trip to Italy. Also today, the rights group Amnesty International has accused Libyan authorities of what it calls shocking abuses against migrants. Amnesty alleges the Libyan Coast Guard has beaten, shot, or sold migrants to smugglers. It also says Christian migrants are being singled out for abuse. It warns European Union efforts to prevent migrants from crossing the Mediterranean to Europe leaves them vulnerable in Libya.
Scientists say frequent droughts, floods, more powerful storms, and rising sea levels are among the effects of climate change. But they say another result is more outbreaks of disease. British researchers have developed a computer model that predicts where this is likely to happen. VOA's Jody Capua reports.
The research centers on zoonotic diseases, illnesses that originate in livestock, wildlife, or even insects. These carriers of disease are known as hosts. It's estimated 60% of emerging diseases are zoonotic. Ebola, HIV, and Zika are some well-known examples. But for the study, researchers focused on Lassa fever. It's a disease characterized by spontaneous internal and external bleeding that's passed from rats to humans. Researchers studied over 400 known outbreaks in West Africa from 1967 to 2012. Dr. David Redding of University College London is an ecologist and first author of the study.
I came into this project thinking about the hosts and where the hosts are found and how things like climate and land use change influence the hosts.
He says there are two broad groups of zoonotic diseases.
Diseases that you can catch from, say, rats or primates or bats. You can get that disease by just contacting them. So rabies is a very well-known example where if you come in contact with an infected mammal, then you can contract the disease. But there are also diseases that require insects, blood-feeding insects, to transfer the virus or bacteria or other type of parasite from an infected animal to people or from people to people, but you still need that insect component for the disease to occur.
There are many types of zoonotic diseases that could pose a major health threat to humans.
Certainly in many tropical areas, you can meet lots of different types of zoonotic diseases that people won't have heard of. There's several different types of Lassa-type diseases, such as Mopea and Lujo. These are really obscure viruses that have only been caught by one or two people. Then there's the really well-known diseases, such as Ebola.
Computer models of epidemics among humans are not new, but Redding says they lack a key component.
For instance, to try and understand things like vaccinations and other treatments, how effective they're going to be, they can build these models of diseases within humans and do a really good job of capturing how people get the disease from each other and from the host. But very little effort really has been put into understanding the host and why it's found in certain places and not in others, and then linking to those really well-developed models of human disease. Linking those two bits of information hasn't really been done before.
The University College London researcher explains how the new computer model looks at disease outbreaks in relation to climate change.
Here we're thinking about sub-Saharan Africa, particularly around Nigeria and Ghana and that area of Africa. Some climate models predict a warmer and wetter environment. And in those conditions, animals that prefer warmer and wetter conditions will be more successful in reproducing, will have more food available, and will be able to spread to areas where before they were just not able to survive.
As a result, the model predicts the number of people in West Africa with Lassa fever will double from nearly 200,000 to more than 400,000 by 2070. The actual figure could be much higher, because many people do not get severe symptoms and could be misdiagnosed as having malaria. Researchers say the model of zoonotic disease transmission could be refined by considering whether it's easy for people to travel, how often they come in contact with others, and their poverty level. The study says the model would have been of value in the recent Ebola epidemic in West Africa and the current outbreak of Zika. The study was published in the June 13th edition of Methods in Ecology and Evolution. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
In South Africa, the father of Reeva Steenkamp gave heartbreaking testimony today as the sentencing hearing continued for Oscar Pistorius. Barry Steenkamp says his daughter's death devastated him and his family and that Pistorius needs to pay for his crime. The superstar athlete faces at least 15 years in jail for murdering his girlfriend. Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
A father's pain laid bare.
Mr. Steenkamp, you still think of Reeva?
My lady, every day. Every day of my life. Morning, noon, at night, early hours of the morning. I think of her all the time.
Barry Steenkamp's hands and body shook as he told Judge Tokozile Masipa and her rapt courtroom about his youngest daughter. The law graduate and aspiring model was 29 years old when she was killed by her boyfriend, superstar athlete Oscar Pistorius. Her father was called to testify at Pistorius' sentencing hearing in Pretoria. The athlete was convicted of murder last year and now faces a minimum sentence of 15 years. Pistorius sat in the dock with his head bowed, occasionally clutching his head in his hands, as Steenkamp spoke to the court for the first time since this headline case began in 2014. During the trial, Pistorius claimed that he mistook Steenkamp for an intruder when he shot four times through a locked bathroom door, killing her on the night of Valentine's Day 2013. Prosecutors argued that he meant to kill Steenkamp. Steenkamp told the court of how the shock of his daughter's death led to his stroke 2 months later and to his continuing heart and health problems. He told the court how he and his wife were virtually bankrupt after Reeva's death and were ordered to leave their home, and how they reluctantly accepted money from Pistorius. He said his wife, June, cries at night over the only child the couple had together. Reeva, June has said, was their Lotlamaki, a baby born years after older siblings. In the Afrikaans language, the term means late lamb. June, he says, has forgiven because she's a Christian.
But then you must understand why forgiving like that, it still does not exonerate you from the crime that you committed. So he must still understand that he has to pay for that, although June has forgiven him so that she can carry on with her life. Oscar has to pay for what he did.
Steenkamp declined to recommend a sentence and said he deferred to Masipa's judgment. In 2014, she convicted Pistorius of culpable homicide, equivalent to the U.S. charge of manslaughter, and gave him a 5-year sentence. He was released on parole in October after a year of time served, only to see his conviction overturned by an appeals court and replaced with a murder conviction in December. Now, Masipa will have to choose a sentence to fit a murder conviction. South Africa does not hold jury trials. But Pistorius's dogged legal team is not giving up. On Monday, the first day of the hearing, his defense presented a psychologist who said that he is now a broken man and needs hospitalization, not imprisonment. The hearing continues. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. And please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Sidrat Franklin, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Linor Mudu. Please join me live every Tuesday at 17:30 UTC in VOA's health program, Health Chat. Hear from doctors, nurses, international experts discussing the health issues of your concern. Health Chat puts listeners directly in touch with medical professionals. You can talk to them live for free or email your questions. Health Chat brings the medical professionals to your home.